Polyphonic Press, the podcast where two music fans pick a classic album completely at random. Using the patented random album generator, they are given an album to review from a curated list of over 1,000 classic releases, spanning multiple genres. And now onto the show. Here are your hosts, Jeremy Boyd and John Van Dyke.
Hey, welcome to Polyphonic Press. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
And let's not waste any time. We've got the patented random album generator right in front of us here. So let's hit the button and see what album we're going to be listening to this week. And the album we're going to be listening to is Brian Eno, Another Green World. Okay, so this is what it says on allmusic.com. It says, a universally acknowledged masterpiece, Another Green World represents a departure from song structure and toward a more ethereal, minimalistic approach to sound. Despite the stripped-down arrangements, the album's sumptuous tone quality reflects Eno's growing virtuosity at handling the recording studio as an instrument in itself, a la Brian Wilson. There are a few pop songs scattered here and there, St. Elmo's Fire and All Come Running, and Golden Hours, but most of the album consists of deliberately paced instruments that, while often closer to ambient music than pop, are both melodic and rhythmic. Many, like Sky Saw in Dark Trees and Little Fishes, are highly imagistic, like paintings done in sound that actually resemble their titles. Lyrics are infrequent, but when they do pop up, they follow the free associative style of albums past. This time, though, the humor seems less bizarre than gently whimsical and adult, fitting perfectly into the dreamlike mood of the rest of the album. Most of Another Green World is like experiencing a soothing dream-filled slumber while awake, and even if some of the pieces have dark or threatening qualities, the moments of unease are temporary, like a passing nightmare whose feeling lingers briefly upon waking, but whose content is forgotten. Unlike some of his later full-fledged ambient work, Eno's gift to melodicism and tight focus here keep the entirety of the album in the forefront of the listener's consciousness, making it the perfect introduction to his achievements, even for those who find ambient music difficult to enjoy. Okay, so this was released on the 14th of November, 1975, and the genres are art pop, ambient, art rock, electronic pop, minimalist, ambient pop, and avant pop. The label is Island Records, and it was produced by Brian Eno and Rhett Davies. And there are 14 songs on the album, and so what we'd like to do is we like to pause halfway through after side one, and there's seven songs on each side. And so if you're listening along, which we encourage you to do, side one will start with the song Sky Saw, and we'll end with Another Green World, the title track. So if you're listening along, pause halfway through, and we'll discuss the album at the midway point. And I've linked the album to both Spotify and Apple Music, so you can listen to it on your preferred medium. And without further ado, okay, here is the first song on the album called Sky Saw. But before we get started, let's hear from our friends over at the Album Nerds Podcast.
Drop the needle on the Album Nerds Podcast.
It's just the Album Nerds.
Just Album Nerds.
Join Andy, Don, and Dude each week as they discuss albums from themes chosen by the Wheel of Musical Discovery.
Heavy metal guitar virtuosos.
Double albums.
MTV Raps.
Punk rock.
The top 10 albums of 1986.
Uncover hidden gems, revisit classics, and hear fresh takes on your favorite records.
Exile on Main Street.
Some of what country music can do best is that storytelling.
This is a messy album, for sure.
I just want to hear Floyd in everything, I think.
Born in the USA.
And it sounds great overall as an album. I'm just not like moved by it.
The Album Nerds Podcast. Three guys talking music.
This is what we call freestyling.
Yes. That's what we call freestyling. No one else would call it that. Other people would call it find another podcast to listen to. Okay, so
give it a spin wherever you find podcasts and albumnerds.com.
great. And ending side one with Another Green World, the title track. Yeah, this is pretty interesting so far.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this. It's definitely different, but I like the real mix of like sort of pop and ambient, and it's not off-putting at all. It's like, well, remember when we were talking about that Paul McCartney album, his first one, McCartney, we were saying how like it felt like a bunch of songs that were like just not quite fleshed out ideas. Well, this album's kind of like that, except the ideas don't seem unfinished.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, it's sort of like he's sort of bouncing around from like he's mixing in sort of the instrumental things with more pop things. You're right. It's sort of like it's a little bit all over the place, but they are fleshed out ideas. They are complete ideas. It's interesting listening to that. And I mean, he's like a musical genius, basically.
Yes. I was going to say, I think he is a genius, because just knowing about some of the other stuff, like even his more ambient stuff is actually quite interesting. It's not for like, you know, daily, everyday listening, but when you're in the right mood, it's pretty good, actually.
Yeah, and he's interesting. He studied experimental music at the Art School of Ipswich Civic College in the mid 1960s. So he actually studied, like his focus was experimental music. So and you know, in the early days of synthesizers, I don't know a lot about it, but there's a style of music. It's a French name. It's not avant-garde. It's something else. It's like music concrète or something like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I have heard of it.
Yeah. I don't know a lot about it, but I think, let me look it up. Cause I think it's a lot of, yeah. So musique concrète, French for concrete music, experimental techniques of musical composition using recorded sounds as raw material. So I think before the synthesizer came out, or because it like the Moog synthesizer didn't really happen until the 60s. There were synthesizers before that.
Yeah, were very primitive. The first synthesizers basically just started with a single tone, and then they would figure out ways to manipulate that tone. I did watch a documentary on this, and it's sort of interesting. Like before they connected a keyboard to the synthesizer, and before they became all modular and everything like that, basically they figured out a way to generate a tone, and then they manipulated that tone into music or sounds or whatever they were doing.
Yeah, and I did hear there is something called an oscillator, and its purpose, the reason it was invented, was to test musical equipment, like to test in the recording studios, to test like the console and make sure everything's working. But I think people started to use it as like people started to use it creatively.
That is the tone that early synthesizers use. Yes, it was the oscillator. I was forgetting the term, but that was it. Yeah.
Yeah. And its purpose for the invention was just to test things out to make sure they were working. You know, and so, yeah, so it's interesting. Auto-tune actually happened the same way, similar way. It was used to test,
unfortunately.
Well, it was used to test, it was used in marine biology for something.
Probably.
It has a weird history. But anyway, yeah, but I think, you know, before the synthesizer, people were, music concrete is, people actually recording things like objects to make music out of. And so I think I'm sure that Eno had, you know, but obviously he would have studied that if he was studying experimental music. And, you know, he was, for the first few albums, he was a member of Roxy Music. And then pretty good band. They had a few hits in the 70s. But I think he really didn't. He's not a band guy. He's not. He was only on their first two albums. And
he wasn't interested in making pop music. I don't think he was interested at all in making like what people call easy listening. I mean, he liked things that sounded good to him, obviously, but what he was interested in was not pop.
Yeah, exactly. If he's doing obvious listening to this, it's quite obvious that he's not interested in making just, although there is some
this pop is closer elements. To pop music than some of his other stuff is. Honestly, this is pretty accessible, even if it's like on the edges of accessible.
And you know, some of the it's funny, the critics at the time of this, like, they didn't like, although this album really didn't do well,
I don't think people knew what to do with it because he's so ahead of his time. There was nothing to compare it to.
Yeah, it didn't sell at all, but it had like favorable reviews from the few people that actually did review it. So this is actually just on the Wikipedia article of the album. It says Another Green World was released in November 1975, and it did not chart in either the United Kingdom or the USA. The album's critical reception was, however, for the most part, very favorable. Henry Edwards of High Fidelity wrote positively of the album, claiming it to be Eno's most accessible to date. And Tom Hall of the Village Voice felt that although it wouldn't be fair to say that Another Green World is Eno's best album, the album is definitely his easiest to love. Something that just caught my eye. So do you know who Lester Bangs is, right? This is what he says. This ain't no Eno record. I don't care what the credit says. It doesn't even get on my nerves.
That's hilarious.
So even Lester Bangs, who is notoriously harsh, thought this was a pretty good album, or at least he didn't hate it.
This was Brian Eno's stuff that he could actually listen to, because apparently he was not a fan of some of his other stuff.
Yeah. Lester Bangs is a character. If you've ever seen Almost Famous, he's portrayed by Philip Seymour Hoffman in that. But he's I've seen video of the real Lester Bangs, and he's pretty he's got opinions.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So thinking about the album, like then when it was released and now, and like, do you think the album would be, obviously it wasn't really a hit and it didn't do well back then, but if it were released today, do you think it would do anything?
It's hard to say. I mean, would it do something based on like Brian Eno's name? Yes, but that's partly because he used albums kind of like this to get that name. But if it was released and nobody knew who he was, it might go a little bit further, just because I think there's more of an establishment of stuff like that. But it might not be, again, everything has got like its niches. Very little is considered like top hit record, so it's hard to say that you would find it, you know, it would be like a hit record or anything like that. I think most of the stuff we listen to would not be a hit record now.
Yeah, I think it would do well in the indie scene. I think maybe not now, but I think maybe in, it's funny, it's weird the way decades work, because now that we're 4 years removed from the 2010s, I'm starting to see the style of that decade. And I think this album might have done better, or at least some of the songs. I think Sky Saw and maybe Saint Elmo's Fire, I think those two songs would probably do well in the indie scene. And I think
there's a hint of like a Tame Impala-ish.
Yeah, that sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not necessarily
a
big pop record, but like the popular indie stuff would would do well.
Yeah. I'm thinking early Tame Impala stuff, but it's still lots of buzz guitar thrown all over everything.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm sort of thinking along those lines too. Like Sky Saw in particular kind of reminded me of stuff that Adrian Belew would do in the 80s with his guitar.
Mm-hmm.
This was a synthesizer doing it.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because the guitar is actually manipulated, and they actually credited the guitar with what it sounds like on certain songs. On the song "I'll Come Running," the guitar is not just guitar; it's castanet guitars. So Whatever the guitar is supposed to sound like, that's how it's sort of credited.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And I did manage to find a few interesting facts about the album. So the core band that plays on this album, some names you might recognize, Phil Collins on drums.
Okay.
Percy Jones on bass.
Okay, interesting. Phil Collins was just fresh into Genesis around this period.
Yeah.
So
you've got Robert Fripp on guitar.
Okay, that makes sense.
John Cale, who we previously did an album of, he played viola.
Okay.
Yeah, so the core band is those guys.
That's a heavy hitter band. Let's just, yeah.
And so another fact is it was co-produced by a guy named Rhett Davies, who went on to produce a lot of artists, a lot of new wave stuff, like Talking Heads, the B-52s, Split Enz, Split Enz, if you don't know, is Neil Finn's first band before he
went to Crowded House. Love Neil Finn's stuff.
Dire Straits' first album. He also produced two albums by King Crimson, which is the Robert Fripp connection.
That would probably be the Adrian Belew era.
Maybe he produced the album Discipline and Beat.
Okay.
Yes, Adrian Belew.
Yeah, that's what I would have thought.
And the last fact that I found was the album did not chart anywhere.
No.
Except for New Zealand.
Now that's interesting, because what kind of chart would this fit on?
I don't even know. Because the genres that it's listed...
Like, we all know the Kiwis are weird. If anybody in New Zealand's listening, I'm just kidding.
But, like, the genres are art pop, ambient, art rock, electronic pop. Okay, like, electronic pop was popular from 1985 to present, but it definitely wasn't popular in 1975.
No.
It was not.
Now, even when we were listening to things like Kraftwerk, they were still establishing stuff at that period. There wasn't much to, like, I guess you could almost put this album up against something like Kraftwerk. That's actually a pretty good comparison. It and the Kraftwerk that are kind of like just kind of like islands alone at its time period. It would take another decade before, you know, it would be establishment.
Yeah, they were sort of early adopters of electronic music and synthesizers and everything. And even still, like, you know, this album, Kraftwerk was all electronic, so they were really into it. But even this still has like the band, like Phil Collins and Robert Fripp. I mean, he's still using musicians, but on the more ambient stuff, more pop songs, that's the band that's playing. But on the ambient stuff, it's just Brian Eno playing everything. Because I picture him as like a mad scientist tinkering away in the studio or something. You know?
Yeah, it's almost like, I don't know, I picture like Rick Wakeman would like climb over top of his stacks of keyboards and stuff like that. I sort of picture Brian Eno doing that, but not on a stage. Completely on his own in a studio.
Yeah, I could definitely picture that too. Yeah, but yeah, I guess we'll get into the second side of the album, and it starts off with a song called "Somber Reptiles." So I love some of the
ambient titles. Music has got some of the most interesting some of the most interesting titles, and they're very descriptive of the sort of the sound that comes about, at least if you're any good at putting up titles that do that. It's interesting and you get really weird sounds. Let's see if this actually sounds like Somber Reptiles.
Let's see. So here we go. Okay, and ending the album with "Spirits Drifting." This is a very interesting album. I really enjoyed it. I mean, I thought it was is different than what I normally listen to. I thought it was, it's really different from anything that was happening at the time. Yeah, I think I really enjoyed this. And you're right, it is sort of like that Paul McCartney album where it's a lot of different ideas, but it doesn't feel slapped together, you know. It does feel like a lot of all the ideas are, you know, sort of fleshed out.
Yeah. Yeah, even with some tracks being only like a minute long or anything like that. I mean, they don't have to be. They're like interludes. They can sort of stand on their own, but they work better as like a piece. The album works really well as like a whole.
Yeah. And I don't think it's a concept album per se.
Not really.
No. Although it could be, the title kind of definitely seems like it could be, like part of a story or something. It's called Another Green World. So like, it could be a concept album, but it's
hard to peg what the concept album would be about. It's very, ethereal in a way. It's not hyper specific or anything. It's more about the music than anything else, as opposed to actually trying to get an idea across. The only idea it's trying to get across is that you can do this for an album, and it works.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he's certainly carved a niche for himself in terms of his own music, and he's also like obviously he went on to be a producer for other artists and teaming up with Daniel Lanois to do, you know, all the They didn't do all the U2 albums, but they did quite a few. And so he has that mind. He's really more of a producer than a musician. And even when he does his own stuff, you know, he's more seeing the big picture rather than playing a piano. He's obviously well trained as a piano player or a pianist, but I think he's more seeing the big picture overall and sort of like, okay, I can put this here and put this there. And, you know, this is how the whole thing kind of comes together. That's sort of the mind of a producer. And like I said, even when he's doing his own stuff and probably even doing the first two Roxy Music albums, you know, he had that sort of vision of like, okay, so this is where I fit in, but I'm also seeing the whole thing and seeing the big picture.
Well, I'm sure he was right up under the nose of the producers for the Roxy Music right there, trying to pick up any tips and tricks of the trade and everything like that, and maybe even coming away with his own ideas like, I wouldn't have done it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, this is it's quite the album. I guess our three favorite tracks, I guess, would be for me, what's the first one called? Oh, that was Guy Saw. And I liked Golden Hours. And I think In Dark Trees was my own.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if I had to pick my three favorite songs, I think I would go with Sky Saw as well. I think I'd go with St. Elmo's Fire.
Okay.
I really like that one. And then what was the other one? I think Golden Hours. I think I would go with that.
That was
one
a
as
good
well.
Song.
That was a really good song. Yeah. I mean, there isn't really, it's kind of hard to pick because, you know, I like the ambient stuff, but the ambient stuff didn't, I don't mean this to sound bad, but it didn't stand out to me, not in a bad way, but it's like, it made me feel rather than it made me pay attention to the music. If that makes sense. Like, it put me in a certain mood. I wasn't necessarily listening to the actual instruments or the actual music. So it's hard for me to remember exactly what each of the ambient songs were and what they sounded like. So that's why I didn't really pick any of those, just because, like, it's not that I didn't like them. It's like, it's sort of like they,
your ear isn't trained to that sort of
exactly
isn't trained to do that for in an ambient sort of sense. I've been listening a little bit more to stuff that's a little bit more on the ambient side, so I can pick up on things like that, which is why I picked the one ambient track, because I think it was one of the standouts on the album. At least it was to me. Just, you know, had a really neat mood to it, a really good feel. Yeah, it just sounded good.
So I guess that brings us to the question is, would you listen to this album again?
Yeah, I probably would. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I would too, for sure. I think I would listen to, I definitely would. I think the production on it, it has the pop songs has that sort of dry 70s production. And I think, but it's also very futuristic and sort of looking for, it's ahead of its time for sure. And I think that's the big influence on a lot of 80s, synth pop bands that would be popular in that, which I've actually started to get more into.
I have too. I think this one actually appeals to me a little bit more, probably because of that 70s production. Yeah, it just appeals to me on a level. I've always preferred the sound of the 70s to the 80s, but I'm starting to like the 80s sort of thing too. I mean, I've been starting to for a little while now, but but yeah, it's still not my favorite, but it's, you know, it's I don't hate it anymore. Yeah.
So yeah, I guess we'll end the episode there. Thank you so much for listening if you made it this far. We want to hear from you whether you agree or disagree with our review of the album. You can do that by just email us at polyphonicpressmusic@gmail.com. And you can visit the website polyphonicpress.com as well. And you can actually send us a text. We've set up there's a new thing with fan mail. So the link is of all that is in the description, in the show notes. And you can contact us that way. And if you feel inclined, you can also help us out on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/polyphonicpress. And you can get these episodes the day before they go live and get a shout out at the end of these episodes. And I think that just about does it. I'm Jeremy Boyd.
I'm John Van Dyke.
Take it easy.